Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
The original machine had a base plate of pre-famulated amulite surmounted by a malleable logarithmic casing in such a way that the two spurving bearings were in a direct line with a panometric fan. The lineup consisted simply of six hydrocoptic marsal vanes, so fitted to the ambifacient lunar wane shaft that side fumbling was effectively prevented. The main winding was of the normal lotus-o-deltoid type placed in panendermic semi-boloid slots of the stator, every seventh conductor being connected by a non-reversible tremie pipe to the differential girdle spring on the up end of the gram meters.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, taking the confusion out of transmutated lunar girdle springs for 4 years and running. Revolution Radio, the number one listener-supported alternative media radio on the planet. All right, thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
I'm sure that we have a show called Plato's Cave right about this time. And it's 7 a.m. on Tuesday. And, well, you know, when I check the schedule, 7 a.m. David Mackey. So I'm just going to see if I can grab Mackey and pull him in. I don't know where he is. Yeah, well, let's see. It's calling in, but I'll maybe step away or maybe busy. So, let me intro Plato's Cave as best I can. You know, this is David Mackey's Plato's Cave on freedomslips.com. This is a Tuesday edition. 7 a.m., as I said. And let me just hit record. There we go. I swear it starts at 10. If anyone is in the chat room and would care to correct me, I'm happy to take that. I'm broadcasting from Narara, which is in Darkajung country. And I apologize that I've been away for so long. Maybe in five shows or something like that. Goodness me. I've been traipsing around the countryside pursuing my favourite endeavour, which is the V8 supercar racing in Australia. A lot of fun. I got very sunburnt, but the racing was good. The fellow that I love to watch, I'm supporting Shane Van Gisbergen of the Red Bull team in Australia. It's now got enough points to win the championship, even though there's another 500 kilometres left in two races in Adelaide. So congratulations to you. Shane, I know he doesn't listen to this, but I'm still supporting him. And the Gold Coast, that's where it is. If you haven't been to Australia, that's in southeast Queensland, a coastal town, some of the longest beaches in the world. Amazing. The town on sand. But, you know, those Florida man would know. That's all like. But, like, we have the very similar. We have Australian man. Gold Coast man. We have living up there, and there's these insanely tall buildings all on sand. If there was a huge tsunami of, say, 100 meters tall, they would all just get pushed right over. Not like in Sydney, everything's built on sandstone. We have roughly half a mile thereabouts of sandstone. And all of our buildings are built into that in the CBD. So, and that's not cannabinoid oil either. That is the Central Business District in Sydney, Australia, built by the harbour. That's what that is. Anyway, I'm sure I've confirmed that I'm okay to pick the radio station up. I'm sure I'm not too early. When I look at all of my times, this should be right, 7:07, 7 a.m. in the U.S. right now. And I'm going to ask that everyone who's listening donates. I think it's very important. The station is not sponsored. If any host has ads, they're specifically for those hosts and those hosts only. And if you like anything that's on the show or any of the other of the host shows, do donate, access the archives to get the history, the back catalogue of any host that you do enjoy. Because there's a couple of years there, at least. We've been on the air. This is the 11th year or something. Crazy now. Also far away when you first started. And Plato's Cave came up. The Shiny Side Out came up because the way that I described the tinfoil hat being folded on a round table that I called in. And conversation went in all different directions, and eventually that came up, and I wrote it down. I noted it, and that was going to be a show. And eventually I was offered a show. Not eventually. Let's say within minutes of that occurring, I was offered a show by the station's owner. Back then, it was Nighthawk. And my hat goes off to him. May he forever rest in peace. In no pain. Sadly passed away, and he didn't see the pandemic. He knew something was coming. He knew civil unrest was coming too. And we all kind of knew the possibility of World War III. It was just around the corner. But he passed away before all of those. And, you know, I think he knew. I really think he knew there was something on the horizon. But look, tonight, since it's Plato's Cave, which is the allegory, Plato's Cave, with the shadows on the wall, people just watching the shadows, one escapes to outside the cave to see what's actually causing the shadows, comes back and tries to convince the people who are watching the shadows that that isn't reality. They're not seeing reality. In fact, reality is outside, and come and have a look. And they rightly killed him for telling the truth. And I think Plato's Cave is an allegory is perfect, because when I was growing up outside of Plato's Cave, there was a U2 song that said, when reality is fiction and TV reality, when the truth is fiction and TV reality. That's where we're living now. We're living in this time when whatever they say on the TV is the truth, according to them. And we're not allowed to talk about anything else. But that it really parallels what's happening today. But I found some news stories in the last week. One of them is really old and yet not spoken about. The first one I wanted to mention here is that a scientist has converted carbon dioxide into clean air, basically taken the carbon out of the air and performed a mechanical photosynthesis on it to produce this read part of the story that says what it does. Lost the phrasing. Never mind. Oh, yeah, it produces two substances, and they're harmless organic materials. And one is carbides, and the other one is bromides. I think, so, bromides. Oh, if I can't find it, it doesn't matter. I'll put the link into the chat room so you can have a look. And I'd be amazed. They're not telling us about this. The last time I saw anything similar, the cost of the machine in carbon to create was more than what it could remove them from the atmosphere. So you're actually just to make the machine to clean the atmosphere, which did a terrible job. This is originally. And now this thing here, this has got a lot of possibility. And I think it's really good. So the hydrogen car is claimed to also be able to do the same thing. Take the carbon out of the air, burn the clean air with hydrogen, and produce water as an output. That's pretty good. Can't complain with that. So it's doing two things. It's cleaning the air and it's not polluting. I'm seeing a day. I had a sudden realization that the messaging around us all to buy these EVs is the good old governmental knee-jerk reaction, where a problem arises and they just jump on the very first thing. Doesn't matter what it is, woohoo! Very first thing, try and fix it. Even though they argued the whole time leading up to that knee-jerk reaction, because remember, governments are glacial. And they argued that there was nothing wrong. No, there isn't any problem. The Earth isn't getting warmer. It's not changing its climate. You're all just a bunch of silly people. That's come and gone, that argument. Now they are in full admission that there is a problem that needs to be addressed. So this chemistry professor has done a great job, and in his synthetic photosynthesis has made the ability to start to suck the carbon dioxide out of the air. Well, cool. All right, I want to see it en masse. It's a huge trial. And let's see what happens. Let's do it. Why not? Who's got the money? Oh, no one's got money for it. I wanted to back that up with a story. And this was published just 2 days ago. There was an accidental power trip. And I don't mean a person's power trip. I mean something tripped the power. Trip the circuit breaker that led scientists to discover a new way of generating hydrogen. Now, back in 2019, the lights in the lab went off and they noticed a drop in the performance of their electrolysis, where they're throwing electricity at water and watching the amount of hydrogen being created and they noticed a drop. Of course, Stanley Meyer made a box that did this with just the right frequency of light in order to be able to split water very rapidly. But, you know, scientists today, since that's all ignored, you know, they're going through the motions to attempt to make it again. Let's invent it again. And let's do something with it. So they've published a paper, and it took them 4 years or something. Obviously, they're crying poor. I don't know. Maybe we need some more money. So we'll find the answer. They had the answer 3 years ago. And that was pretty much... The team is now working on new ways to improve industrial processes to generate hydrogen, such as making the cells containing water to be transparent. That way they can shine light into it, so as to introduce light into the water splitting process. Wow, that's crazy. Who knew? Why don't you just put a light bulb inside it? And voila. And I think that, look, if you work on the right frequency, everything's easy. At the moment, the splitting of hydrogen is no different than the tree that's being grabbed by a huge, say, like, arm from a tractor and then vibrated to make all the fruit fall off the tree. It's a lot of effort for what is quite a delicate process of just coming up and turning the fruit like 90 degrees, and if it's ripe enough, it'll fall off. And that delicate process of removing the fruit, very little effort, totaling a very small amount of effort, and you have to think about what this huge tractor that weighs tons is vibrating to be able to do it, the amount of horsepower required, and it's factors bigger, like crazy bigger, that it should require that much energy to do it with brute force. You don't need brute force. And so this refinement of being able to determine what is it actually going to take to split the hydrogen off more rapidly, and not just, I mean, dead set, putting 10,000 volts into water to make it happen, you know, creating carbon, just doing a whole bunch of wrong. Where you don't need to excite the water very much for it actually to happen. I've seen an example done on when the internet was just early in a what looked like Perspex cylinder that was, you know, like a Perspex plate on the bottom. There was nothing else in it, only a couple of wires and some plates inside it. And if the water disappeared like it was being pumped away, like there was a leak in the bottom, and that was extraordinary. There was something about that. I also saw a video of a guy who had made a magnetic shield that wasn't made of metal. It itself is not magnetic, and that's what we currently have. It looked like it was a lattice of oddly shaped carbon compressed into a form, and then around the outside was kind of like aluminium or something. I don't know what the metals were. I don't know what the substance was, but that's kind of what I imagined it to be. And, geez, it's good. Doesn't take much. And if we had something like that, we could, in effect, not actually create a monopole magnet, but in effect have one, because if you can insulate the rest of a rod that was a magnet, except for the tip, then only the tip would be the pole. And it would be a monopole magnet in effect, not in reality. But you could do some pretty cool things, like it would always be repelling. And if you could, like we did with the film projector, the original film projectors hid when the cell for that frame of footage, it hid the transition to the next one by having a rotating, well, not like a disc, but a drum with holes cut out so that you didn't see the transition. It rotated and hid the transition between, as because it's socketed down the sides of the film, you knew when that was. And so, yeah, it hit it quite well, effectively flashing every frame that we saw as its own frame on the screen, like a single image, rather than watching it go through projector. And you only have to do that, I forget, 20 times a second or greater, and your brain is fooled into believing that it's a continuous motion of an object that you're looking at. So I think that's pretty cool. If you did the same thing that was insulate mechanically the pole of the magnet that was a monopole, effectively a monopole, then you could perpetually push the like pole away. And while it was insulated as in its transition, then it wouldn't want to be attracted to the other part of the pole. And that's all that you could, you would require, and probably a governor, to be able to prevent this from overspinning, or, so you could turn it off or do something. I just think it's really extraordinary. Like, this, we're not very far away from having some kind of tag that allows us to still burn as much darned carbon as we want, to make as much power as we want, and to live on this planet, we're governed by the amount of power that we can produce locally or carry around on our person. At the moment, the devices last about a day, pretty much, that we've got. And the useful life without a constant power source is maybe a little small. You know, I could go, like in the olden days, maybe a week between charging on a phone. That'd be really nice. It's going to take a lot more than we've got now in, to be able to get there. I struggle to see how we would get there. Yeah, that doesn't matter. But I wanted to point out something else. This is an interesting story that I found. And can I paste it? Yep, I did. This is methane super emitters on Earth spotted by space station experiment. All right. So every gas has a wavelength. And if you have a detector at that wavelength, you can see it more readily than anything else that that detector is pointed at. For instance, marijuana fields give off a certain frequency of light, and you only need to detect that so that if you're flying above them in a forest, they'll stand out like a person does on FLIR, infrared. So they can do the same thing, and they've done it. They've done it for methane. But they've also noticed something really extraordinary. They've found these, like, for instance, in New Mexico, in Carlsbad, there's a methane plume that's 2 miles long. And there's still no explanation of the cause of that. It could be coming from beneath the ground. Don't know. But it's very interesting. If you were to examine the entire planet, where all the cattle are, for instance, and see how much methane they produce, this isn't what this finding has discovered. There isn't cattle in some of these locations, and suddenly they're seeing this methane there. It's like if you could suddenly put on a set of glasses, like sunglasses or what have you, like in the movie They Live, but rather see entities that were standing around you. That's, well, I was trying to avoid a pun, but that's how illuminating this technology is. Oh, don't hurt me. It's 7 o'clock your time. It's only 10:26 my time, so it doesn't matter, I don't suppose. I can make dad jokes and ridiculous puns. And the goal, I suspect, from this methane viewing of Earth by satellite is to attempt to rein in the production of methane. Every single... So what produces methane? Well, herbivores produce methane. If you eat half your body weight in vegetation, your cohabiting bacteria in your gut will produce methane as a byproduct, having to try to work through or process the vegetable matter. Maybe this would be a sad day for the planet, but if they discovered that humans who are vegetarians were producing more methane than meat eaters, that would be something else. Of course, the net total of a meat eater probably be overall greater methane production to keep that person alive than it would be for the vegetarian, certainly, because the vegetarian doesn't have to eat a quarter of their weight every day in vegetation, as in like your cow does, or, you know, whatever the meat-eating creature is. It doesn't have to be bovine, though. So I think it's really extraordinary that we're seeing this come about as well as what we're not hearing about this. They want people to blame right now. Why is the climate so bad? Well, it was your ignorance for the last 40 years that's probably led us here. Remember the same companies that told us smoking was harmless were selling the cigarettes. Well, the same companies that were selling fuel were doing so with blinkers on. I drive a fuel vehicle, but I haven't done it yet, I'm intending on running it on E85. We know that in Australia is race fuel, but it's 85% less net new carbon, and that's really important. You burn a little more, so I would drop that down to 60%, because you probably use 20% more E85 than you would regular fuel. Could be higher, depending on your boost levels. So if you're running boost on your car, you're going to be using more because there's more air oxygen, so you can push more fuel in and get a bigger reaction. And then you can get more power. And, yeah. And I don't think there should be power restrictions. But if you think that immediately, if every car on the planet that was using petroleum or gasoline was converted to E85, and I'm going to be starting to safely say that not everyone's a powerhead. They just want to get about their business and do their dailies. So you could probably say 70% reduction overnight if you could make them all change overnight. And 70% you could be saving on the planet CO2 net new emissions. And then the 30% would be what needed to be added to E85. But E85 typically is 15% net new carbon and 85% non-net new carbon, as in recyclable carbon. And if the first story, where the scientists have converted carbon dioxide into harmless materials that could be used, say, to grow plants, for instance, like fertilizers, then, because that's what the first story was about, then that net new carbon could be neutralized anyway, and the recyclable carbon would end up being consumed. We probably have to monitor how much we were removing from the atmosphere in order to maintain the correct temperatures. But you could do the same thing. You could actually moderate the amount of carbon in the atmosphere, you know, intentionally, in order to continue to run gasoline cars. I mean, it's not rocket science. It's practical that we do. Those people who are most complaining about climate change are those also I'm going to be really nice. All right, so the people who have their head in the sand that refuse to believe that the climate's changing are only looking at today and yesterday and really nothing more. They refuse to believe that there's a greater trend. And if you look way back at the glaciation period, you'll see that it's still thawing from then. And it's still thawing, is going to continue to thaw even without humans' help. So even if you deleted everybody off the planet, like just removed them all overnight, as big spaceships came and sucked up all the people and all of their loving pets, took them away somewhere else, the planet would still continue to warm, and not just through the final part of that CO2 being emitted, but rather to continue the thaw from the last glaciation. That's the natural course. And that's what people are quick to blame the carbon emissions and the methane, all the other greenhouse gases. Yes, they do make it hotter. They do make it hotter while there is infrared in the air, because it's an infrared blanket. Like that little thin piece of foily stuff that they give you if your body's in shock. That's an infrared reflector. So you don't lose any more body heat. In fact, it just reflects back on you and you get warmer. Crazy how that happens. So very simply, the carbon in the air and the methane in the air, and there's a bunch of other gases that are also equally negatively impacting the climate, or making it hotter, but it only makes it hotter during the day. And that's really important. It's only while there's a light shining on it, kind of, it's like having reflectors, and it makes more of the same heat by not letting it go out into space and reflecting it off. So the hope that I've got is that we can find something to clean up the carbon, balance it out a little, and then use that to modulate the carbon so that we've found some kind of equilibrium. Convert most of the cars to E85. Don't have to do EV as soon as we thought we needed to, because the impact of the EVs in the marketplace, it's a planet, I should say, the marketplace, it's quite good because we're selling a lot of aluminium, there's a lot of lithium, a whole bunch of plastics. But overall, it takes about half of the 10 years of the car's life to actually go carbon neutral on the creation of the car. And that's if you're using it daily by not emitting the carbon. But it's only personally not emitting the carbon. If you're lucky to be next to a nuclear power station, or your house is being fed by it, or even the charging stations that you have available to your person are being powered by nuclear, then there's very little in the way of carbon that's being produced to create electricity for your emission-free vehicle. But in Australia, we have some renewables. They're very low on the list. We could say that we had, I'll just throw numbers out. Imagine if we had 40% renewable in this country. The that every time I got power to charge my EV, at least 40% of that came from renewables. And only 60% of the power that went to my EV was net new carbon, i.e. digging up the old trees, which have been buried for, I forget how many million years it is. If they, the coal, by the way, if the coal is the only thing that's powering your EV, then you're actually producing carbon just like you would if you were driving a gasoline vehicle. And I think the amount of people that don't realize that, say, in Australia, only 6% of all of the carbon emitted in Australia is from transportation. That includes buses, trucks, and business cars and private cars. And private cars are only 2% of the 6% in total. These are some crazy numbers. Like, it really is crazy that we should be putting so much effort into making the people buy EVs to fix the planet. Because it's not where the majority, you could say, if I was going to be very kind, be very kind. 0.5% of all the carbon. So that's 99.5% of the carbon produced in Australia is everything other than domestic vehicles. The numbers would be very similar in every other country in the world. And it appears in the graphs that and the data that I've been able to see that the majority of the world's carbon is coming from China, and it is greater than the cumulative total of every other country on the planet. It doesn't mean you shouldn't do something about it where you live, because that's really important. And I'm not saying that humans are causing it, because you've already heard my premise that we're still in a thaw, in a glass glaciation, which is true. And where it'll settle is already evident because of all the ground about 2 meters above sea level around the world is an intertidal zone in the final point. Yeah. So I don't care too much about the temperature. I'm looking at, this is the Plato's cave, of course. So there is one message being sent to the world, and that is that people need to change their habits, while big business doesn't have to change anything. The government of Australia was voted in on the standing, their platform, which is, we'll do something about this and get to net zero carbon by, I forget what it was, what the date was, 2050 or something. The amount of effort required to do that is so extraordinary that our industries will have to just become super tech companies with no smelters, nothing coal burning. We won't be able to use gasoline anymore at all. And all of that polluting that creates this, the tech we have, should have to be done on another country somewhere, or preferably on the moon where no one cares. Because the planet can't get to that without sacrificing everything that we have. There isn't a way of doing it. It just isn't. You know, yeah, you want metal melted, well, you need electricity for that. You want aluminium melted? Oh, you need electricity for that. You want to ship things around the world? It's currently diesel, which is even worse, makes tons more carbon. And there's this dirty diesel they use when they're in international waters, which is even more repulsive. super cheap. Like, it's awfully cheap to use. And like pirates, they pull up to the ships as soon as they're in international waters, and they bite alongside like a refueler, and they fill them up with this dirty rubbish. And I'm kind of really appalled that no one wants to stop it, but, you know, everyone's reaping the benefits of having this shipping advantage. Planes have kind of disappeared. Air freighting stuff around has kind of gone by the wayside because we're not flying half as much as we used to. A plane ticket used to be $50 or $90. Now is $500. The pricing's insane because there's many fewer passengers, and so the cost efficiencies just aren't there from the airline companies. And so the messaging is different for the people to what's really happening. If we created these like huge machines that put the carbon emissions at least into neutral, so we were not emitting any new carbon or being able to reduce the carbon that's in the air as well, then we could all produce carbon with abandon. We could produce methane with abandon if we can convert methane back to something inert. And I do hold a lot of hope in that if that is the actual problem. Because I swear, the sun's UV energy, which is not part of the infrared climate blanket that's created by methane and carbon dioxide, we're seeing increases in that light frequency in the ultraviolet spectrum, which could only be created by two things. One, we're thinning the atmosphere that stops it from reaching the Earth's surface, i.e. the ozone hole, for instance, is one excuse. Or the sun is producing more of it. And it's likely that the sun is still always producing more and will continue to produce more as it goes through its life cycle. I'm not saying that it is producing more. I'm not. We're experiencing more at the ground level. I've got textbooks that suggested that only occasionally UVA light hit the Earth's surface, mostly up at 40,000 feet, because you get A and B, and I don't think they knew about C back then. This is like 50 years ago. And they did nothing about it. They documented it. Look, we've written it down. Nothing more to know, nothing more to see. That's the end of that conversation. And now we have all three hitting the Earth's surface. So something's changed about that, and there has not been an attributing scientific method that allows that to be proven, that it is only the ozone hole. That's the disappointment that I have. I think maybe there's combinations of all of these things. Yes, it's getting hotter in the infrared. Yes, there is more UV light in the Earth's surface. Yeah, sure, there is methane being created by animals, by farm animals. But weren't all the wild animals who were herbivores that in the last 200 years, most of those have been killed off? Weren't there more then than there are now? Like, you know, you think about those huge migrating bison across the US. They were in their millions, greater than the quantity of cows there are now. By far greater. You know, all the elephants that used to exist, say, you know, say maybe 300 years ago. before all the farmers decided to put fences and stop them migrating around. And then, you know, tusks or ivory being, you know, a commodity. There was more. In Australia, there was quite a lot more of the native kangaroo species and other herbivores. And then you've got the megafauna era, where there was, you know, was it 40,000 years ago or greater than 12,000 years ago at least? There were huge animals and millions of those, which had to eat even more vegetation than you know, that would be humanly possible to survive. And they would have been producing methane like there was no tomorrow. Of course, for them, sadly, there was no tomorrow because there was several large impacts that broke their rain, broke the ice sheet and caused the huge inundation through the scab lands in America. I got that right. I watched a documentary the other day. And changed everything about the world. All the people, the pre-flood people, none of those people lived across the barrier to the post-flood. The stories of Noah's Ark is one tale, but then, you know, all around the world, all the native people at the time, they all passed down a story. But no stories were about a flood all around the world. Everyone had one about their local area. So the Earth has been in different states. We have produced more methane. And the fires that people used to burn. Remember, everyone had a fireplace. We were burning coal like our lives depended on it. We were burning all the trees down. In Australia, huge areas of land were being incinerated by the traditional custodians of the land in order to keep the ability to hunt alive and well in sections. They would rotate this, you know, burn a new piece of land and move into it. And it does two things. One, it prevents all of the extremely dangerous creatures from moving into your territory. Because if you just walk through the, you know, through the forest here into unburnt forest, for instance, you're going to encounter dangerous creatures. In fact, deadly creatures is what's going to happen. Oh, Mitchell Buppet is coming up next. I've just seen his post. Thank you, Mitchell. And I must apologize. Becky, but I don't know where he is. He must be on an urgent call or away for some reason. And I'll probably find out more as we go into Thursday's show. Hopefully he's available. I hadn't heard in advance that he wasn't available tonight, but hey, I'm back on deck, and hey, that's what my co-host is all about. I thank Becky for his efforts in the last maybe five shows, including Shining Set Out. But I was not available. I was trackside enjoying everything that there is to do with motorsport. And I do love it. I do support it. That other thing, the race fuel that they use, they're not huge carbon emitters. Really not. So you want to start arguing about it? Yeah, there's carbon in the production of the tyres. There's carbon in the people's fuel to get there and observe it. Yeah, electricity is carbon, but I think we're on the cusp of breaking the carbon cycle and being able to remove it out of the atmosphere and continue to pollute temporarily, albeit, and be able to remove it from the atmosphere to live another day, to go on burning those fossil fuels with abandon. If you're hearing this and you don't agree, pop something in the chat room. Happy to mention it or mention your point of view. You can have an avatar You don't have to say your actual name. I go by the name Narara because that's where I live. This is Dark and Young country. That's where I broadcast from in Australia. If you're from any other part of the world, you probably detect an accent. I don't have an accent. I'm kind of certainly not the wild Australian accent that some might say you would expect from an Australian. No, we're just the same as everybody else. There'll be a couple of words that will stand out to someone in America. For instance, they go, oh, that's an Australian saying it. Or, because I don't say Aussie instead of Aussie. So what do you mean, you're Aussie, Osborne? Is that what you mean? No, I'm Australian. Yeah. So Mitchell Bupp he's coming up, and he's on from 8 till 10 a.m. It also says /p.m. It obviously depends on where you are in the world. It's whatever time zone you're in. Where Kentucky is, it's between 8 and 10 a.m., and he's coming up next in a very short 8 minutes. It's going to be until he joins you. And I'm going to say thank you very much, Mitchell, for reminding me that your show's coming up. Goodness me, all by my lonesome here tonight. And since I've had such a long time away, kind of a bit rusty, to be honest. Yeah, I had some new stories to talk about. But I don't know. Australia, hey, oh, watch out for this. This is something interesting. For all the climate deniers, they're going to post that the southeastern part of Australia is getting colder and heading towards an ice age. That's what's coming up, because I think tomorrow is when the southeastern part of Australia is going to have close to the lowest temperature ever recorded for this time of year. And it's due to a large polar air mass that has left the pole and is heading towards the equator. It just happens to cross Australia, and that's, you know, we're in line for that. I don't live in that part anyway. Yeah, it's cold tonight outside, but it's not going to be awful. In the next couple of days, we're going to see snow in the Blue Mountains again, possibly snow in Oberon. But you'd have to Google it to find out where it is. I've got some friends that live there, and they aren't worried at all. In fact, I think farmers know more and admit more than some of the city folk. We don't tend to see much in the way of change except for the temperature extreme in summer that just seems to be breaking records every single year. And that doesn't sound like a place that's going into an ice age. But I suppose if the ocean conveyor stopped, then it's all held or break loose in the northern hemisphere. The southern hemisphere gets away pretty much unscathed. But, yeah. So watch out for that story. I know there's a lot of cherry picking in the upcoming Ice Age group, whoever you are, and believing that's the case. A lot of cherry picking ignores all the hot temperatures and only points out all the cold ones. Advocates for climate change usually point out only the hottest times. But I'm going to say this. If you seal a kitchen, for instance, seal it up, it's got an operating fridge in it and nothing else. And if you open up the freezer door, while the whole time from that point on, the freezer will commence to get warmer. You've turned the fridge off, or the fridge freezer off. You turned it off, and as it actually gets warmer, the air locally around it will get colder, and there'll be slumps of cold air that find its way to some of the extremes within the kitchen floor as it falls down. some people in a room will think overall that it's getting hotter because there's no longer the influence of the perpetual cool. There's bits of cool, but they're mostly warmth. And I think it doesn't matter which way you look at that closed environment, eventually the room will find its equilibrium and settle at a temperature, which is warmer than what the freezer was to begin with, slightly cooler than for the whole room, as that temperature is then absorbed and lost outside of that environment. So if it was a glass box, it would, cool the glass and then the glass would warm up from the exterior temperature. Did physics, and this is just exactly what poor measuring can do, or a poor understanding of what the measurements mean can produce as a paper. That's all we're looking at here. We're not looking at very much. Oh, the music's about to start any second. Guess what? There it is. Mitchell Buff's coming up next for the best UR in the business. It's going to have you 2 hours starting sign. Thank you very much for being with Plato's Package. Thank you, everyone.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message. Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen, with host Zen Garcia, at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course of...